But why at 24, not at 34?
So definitely can also make the jump at any age. I feel like I was at it was more like a fork in the road. It wasn't a milestone that was hit, you know, where I decided that's the milestone. Once it's hit, I will make this transition. I remember I was seeking your advice for when I should make this transition. And you always knew that I was going to make the transition. You always pushed me to go a bit further, a bit further, a bit further, wait for the major milestone to occur. Maybe in hindsight, that could have been the right approach. But the fork in the road was, as you mentioned, you know, the MBA. Going into this would really be that I want to dedicate myself to BCG, especially that they're willing to sponsor me for my education. I want to come back, do the work for them, stay there for multiple years. And at the age of 24, I thought, you know what, I'd rather take the risk now at a younger age. And if I fail, I fail in a few years. I'm not afraid of that. I can always pivot again, still being young, rather than being an older person and taking a larger risk when you have, you know, greater responsibilities.
Welcome to Reimagining You, the podcast where we explore personal branding, leadership, and the entrepreneurial journey. I'm your host, Dr. Eli Daher, and today's episode is particularly special as I sit down with someone very close to me. My son, Ryan Daher. Ryan, good morning.
Hello. Great to be here.
Ryan's story is one of the exploration, reinvention, and bold decision-making. Having grown up across Asia, Middle East, and North America, he was exposed to a wide range of cultures, education systems, and ways of thinking. He started university in engineering, and I've got a little joke on that, and only to realize that it wasn't his passion. Then he moved to data and business analytics, graduated at the top of his class in university and with multiple awards, and then took the corporate route like everybody, joining one of the most prestigious consulting group, which is BCG, where he earned multi-promotions during these 2 years, even to the point where he was securing a sponsored MBA. Like many, he took the corporate route, joining one of the world top consulting firms, BCG, where he thrived, earning 3 promotions in 2 years and even securing a full sponsorship MBA offer. Well done, Ryan. But at just 24, Ryan made a bold move. He walked away to become a full-time entrepreneur. This episode is for the young minds out there navigating their careers, debating whether to stay in the corporate world or branch out to follow their own mission. Ryan will share his experiences, the mindset shifts that led him to take the leap, the challenges he faced, and the lessons he's learned along the way. So whether you're at the start of your journey or considering a major career shift, his insights may just help you shape your own path. Ryan, welcome to Reimagining You. Let's dive in.
Sure.
I want to start with this, you know, you're going to engineering. And I have to guess, I should have guessed, engineering was not your thing because, you know, you were struggling even to assemble an IKEA bookshelf, right? Using the Allen key and assemble that. But you came to realization and you shifted interest and you thrived into the data and business analytics. But then you jumped into short period in the corporate world and then went on your own business. Being an entrepreneur, what has happened?
Well, first of all, the IKEA set is still functional and it's still at home. So I wouldn't call it a complete failure. But what has happened is a big question. University was a great experience. I did 1 year in McGill Engineering and it was interesting. But working through it, especially the long hours studying and practicing for the exam, I didn't feel excited about what I was doing. And it took a lot of mental strain in order to just, you know, advance one step forward. And throughout my life, that's when I realized that a shift must occur, is when I really have to put a lot of effort just to make a little bit of small amount of progress. It takes too much mental effort. Mm-hmm. So that's where I decided that maybe I should take a switch, an alternative route. I'm not afraid of taking risks and decided to, you know, join data science and something that I really enjoyed. I thought it was the future and I went into it. And as you mentioned, then joining a consulting firm, which has little to do with data science, had a great experience there. And eventually, as of now, decided to embark on my own journey, and we'll see what happens from there.
Wow. That's a very short period to really transition everywhere, right? But I want to unpack a little bit your entrepreneurship or your business, because when did you come to realization first to start on your own? Have you prepared mentally before? I mean, you're leaving a very competitive job with a competitive salary and a good promotions and a whole secure and comfortable area. And not only that, you're going to uncharted territory for you, coming from a technology background or a data science background, going to what we call it the unattractive businesses or unsexy business, which is integrated packaging and logistics. So let's unpack this a little bit. Finding your mission, when was it the light bulb has lit up? And then going to that space.
I mean, it's an interesting question. It felt more like a leap of faith. But I mean, throughout my life, I've always felt that I like, creating something and working for myself. And I always put effort into something, even if I don't get, external rewards from it. It may take a long time to see some results. Mm-hmm. But as long as I'm enjoying it, I'm enjoying the journey, and I get a cool story out of it, I'm more than fine taking a leap of faith. Now, particularly this unsexy business, which is in packaging, logistics, it wasn't a passion. It's still not a major passion of mine, to go into packaging. And the story is actually pretty funny. At some point, I had multiple small projects. They weren't, really businesses. Multiple small projects with my co-founder. And each one took a little bit of time, but for some reason, we thought that we could juggle five at the same time. Looking in hindsight, neither of them was being tackled properly, but they were all fun and interesting to pursue. Mm-hmm. But when I joined the corporate world, especially at a very, demanding firm like BCG, I had to make the decision to choose one business and just focus on it in whatever free time I have. And the decision was made purely because we had one order. Over the past 2 years of having business, we had secured one order. Yeah. And it was more than any of the other projects. So that was when I decided that's the one I'm going to focus on, and I'll keep going at it until it yields success. But even when I decided to quit and, go full time in the business, it wasn't a sure thing or a sure transition, going from one, high paying salary and great job to something that was, all amazing. It was definitely a difficult thing to do, a long jump, and definitely a leap of faith, but I enjoy it. I'm still young. I feel like risks are something you should take. And we'll see what the results yield in a few years.
Yes. Well, why at 24, not at 34?
So definitely can also make the jump at any age. But I feel like I was it was more like a fork in the road. It wasn't a milestone that was hit, where I decided that's the milestone. Once it's hit, I will make this transition. I remember I was seeking your advice for when I should make this transition. And you always knew that I was going to make the transition. You always pushed me to go a bit further, a bit further, a bit further, wait for the major milestone to occur. And maybe in hindsight, that could have been the right approach. But the fork in the road was, as you mentioned, the MBA. Going into this would really be that I want to dedicate myself to BCG, especially that they're willing to sponsor me for my education. I want to come back. Do the work for them, stay there for multiple years. And at the age of 24, I thought, I'd rather take the risk now at a younger age. And if I fail, I fail in a few years. I'm not afraid of that. Can always pivot again, still being young, rather than being an older person and taking a larger risk when you have, greater responsibilities. That was the
nice. Plan. Nice. So you always had that knack of doing something on your own, doing business. You had several ideas, small ones. There was a compelling event, which is you got the order, first order. Congratulations. So this was, the business that you want to pursue. Then juggling between corporate hours and then night hours working on your business. You also had another compelling event, which actually was forced by the company, which is, okay, well, you need to decide and you need to dedicate maybe a commitment for 3-4 years between MBA and then back to the firm. So this is when you decided to leave. And I think the other thing is why 24? You had the compelling event, but also, yeah, you don't have much, extended responsibilities like family, loans, children, education. So you could pivot anytime and you can go back. That's a very good, points to calibrate, especially for our audience, the younger minds, when they decide to do and when is the right time to do it. So find that compelling event maybe, or identify if there is a compelling event to jump, and then weigh your risks and rewards, and then see the next step, plan B, in case something fails. Very good. So education. Now, you've been excelling in education. You came first in your class. You got all the awards. You were offered an MBA, but then you decided, okay, well, leave this. What they gave me is good foundation. Leave the MBA because maybe I don't need it. So what's your view on young minds pursuing education or pursuing entrepreneurship? Is there a difference? Is there a shift? Or what would we talk about here in terms of advice?
I mean, education is always important, of course. But there's a difference between, theoretical knowledge that you learn by reading books and by mainly learning from other people that have done the work. It's great to learn from them. So you get an understanding, the base understanding of, core concepts.
Yeah.
But then there's another side of learning, which is actually doing it yourself, being thrown in the deep end and figuring it out mainly by screwing up, making mistakes. I think both are very important, but you shouldn't dwell too much on the theoretical knowledge. You should get some understanding and then jump into the deep end. And that's typically how I've at least seen you learn the fastest and a bit more deep, enriched. Because you take a risk, you go in the deep end, you get smacked a little bit, and then you learn from the experience. Mm-hmm. So both are useful. Don't dwell too much on the education. Just get into it and you will learn the lessons, naturally.
Very good. When you came and broke the news that you want to go on your own and be an entrepreneur, what first thing that came to my mind? Oh, now he's going to ask me to be an investor. But then I realized that, no, you had it all figured out by yourself and you didn't need my help, which is great. So figure out for your young minds, figure out how you're going to reach there. And it's okay to ask for friends and family investment. But you chose a bootstrap method rather than taking the whole approach and then going through friends and family funds or anything else. Why bootstrapping?
I mean, I guess it's the two factors. The first one being the business model that I'm in is leaning towards the service industry. And with service, businesses, you can put in the work and get the results before having to pay out of pocket. You're kind of transferring wealth and serving as a broker and adding value in the process. So that's the first reason. I didn't need to get some funding. The second thing is, I feel like for the beginning, bootstrapping is definitely something that everyone should try. Because if you receive, money from investors before you really understand how to run your business and what are the problems and challenges that you could face, typically overstudying, something, trying to perfect something and then get money and then go full steam into it, you'll get the lessons, but at the expense of your investors and typically at a much costlier expense than if you were to just do it yourself in the beginning. Learn from the lessons, and then if you still require some capital, going and raising it, having proved the value, in the first place, understanding some things first.
Okay, good. That's both ways will work, but I guess you took the approach where you need to be a bit more conservative, take from the business here while you're still learning and growing the business and, identifying where the expansion would be. I want to bring in your consultant world. Even though you lived for 2 years, but you worked on very interesting and big projects. And I think one takeaway for you that you took away, that you took from consulting is it only takes a consultant to turn cardboard into money-making PowerPoints. So that's a good trait because that's what consultants do. They look at problems, issues, or even simple things, and then they turn it into solutions. So kudos to that learning. That's very good. let's talk about you and your credibility or knowledge about cardboard. Typically, and the previous podcasters came in and they always the advice is stay in your lane. So swim in your lane means that if I come from an FMCG background, I'm going to stay in FMCG. If I come from oil and gas, I'll stay in oil and gas. If I come here, finance, I'll stay in finance. You have just jumped to really an uncharted territory. So how do you talk to customers? And, you know, customers, how would they trust you in terms of credibility, authority, and knowing what you're doing in the packaging business or logistics business?
So first of all, I agree with the other people that have been there. You should stay in your lane to the extent where you want to continue growing and learning and really master it. I always believe that you should do something, not necessarily that you're, you know, fully passionate about, but that you truly believe you could be the best at. And to do so, you should stay in the same zone for an extended period of time so that you can learn many lessons from it and you can grow and expand. Mm. But early on, like I did, I jumped around a little bit until I got into a niche that kind of flowed in the right direction. And I start learning and snowballing from it, which is not just in the packaging, but mainly the trading, procurement, and supply chain.
Okay,
those are the three main areas. Now, regarding credibility, I wouldn't say that I'm the most credible person in packaging. As you mentioned, I'm, 25 years old, so I don't have 10 years of experience running packaging operations, etc. But from my experience in consulting, neither did I have working on the other projects when I was a consultant, okay. You know, at 20, 21, 22, etc. The main thing, though, is trying to leverage other people's expertise and putting it together to create value to solve a problem. And that's typically what we did at BCG and also what we do, you know, in our businesses today. We leverage the experience that we have working with manufacturers that have been in the industry for multiple years, freight forwarder, customs brokers. We leverage this knowledge, learn from them, of course, and then also put them together in a very cohesive manner so that the customer has a seamless experience and feels like they're really talking to the experts in the industry while it's being orchestrated by myself and the other members of my team.
Mm, okay. That's a very good point. And I think, you know, if I would say to the young minds or the listeners there, you need to find your unique value, right? So your unique value is not knowing your craft. We call it knowing the craft, right? But your unique value is understanding the problems and advising and consulting. And that's where you project the confidence, as opposed to a retailer or a wholesaler or a manufacturer that, okay, this is what I have. Tell me what you want, and then I will provide it to you. So you use that unique value and the skills that you have around that. You hired or asked for experts. You surrounded yourself with the experts to widen up the scope in your field and propose to the customer. And this is how you create the traction with the customer. Am I right? Very good. Very good. So this is going very well. We're going to go to the next portion of it. So typically, you have your mission, you have your ambition, you find either a compelling event or a decision, and then you start at either staying in your lane. One podcaster says, don't stay in your lane, but stay in the pool, right? Around that.
It's a good analogy.
It's a good analogy, staying in a pool. Find what your unique value, what are your differentiators in the market for that particular whether it's a person or a business or an idea, what differentiates you from others, and then go out and expose it to the world. So people normally go to social medias or campaigns and whatever. They use LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever social media to get them become visible. How did you come up, you know, from the cocoon of the incubator and then started out to the world and started reaching customers?
So it's a great segue. I would say that social media and really exposure is not something that we are, you know, the best at so far. And it is something that we have in our strategy, something that we will do more of. But as you mentioned, we're in more of a boring business. And it's a business that's not mass appealing. It's not something that people are going to follow on Instagram, you know, follow a packaging page, for example. Yeah. But, and we cater to the businesses. So our focus is really solving business problems. And so far has been mainly on the outreach side rather than in-reach or people coming directly to us. Although that, of course, happens many times through word of mouth, referrals, et cetera, okay. rather than through social media. But to get the first customers, it really was bootstrapping, getting proficient at sales, and not being afraid to cold call, cold email, reach out to the relevant people, you know, give them a call, let them understand the value. You're never selling something to a client. You're just portraying the value that you have to offer and allowing yourself the opportunity to present it to a potential client. If they see the value and it's something that is useful to them, then of course they'll gravitate towards you and they'd be willing to take it to the next step. But we never approach it that I'm trying to sell something to you. I'm just have some value, like it to present it to you, the opportunity to show okay. it to you. If you're interested, let's talk more about it. If not, there's no problem, no harm done.
Okay. Very nicely put, because you know your channel to market is not really marketing. I mean, can you imagine my passion really on Instagram is to follow a packaging 100%. Company with all the nice pictures.
And we've tried this before. We have an Instagram page. But as you can imagine, you know, business owners or COOs of companies, procurement managers are not sitting around following their packaging provider on Instagram. So it's not the key area.
Yeah. So you mastered instead the art of selling.
Correct.
You know, and one portion of the art of selling is in cold calling.
Yes.
But also you have channels of referrals. You have customers who are talking to other customers. You have friends. You have people that has, you know, referred you, oh, a person might need packaging. Pretty much, actually, your market is huge because everything we see around us
Definitely.
Is packaged.
Yep.
So, I mean, it is true an unsexy business, but the market is tremendous. Mm-hmm. Every little piece that we have, from a water bottle to a vitamin pill to anything, needs a package. And this is where you are. And I even read, you know what I read last time, is today the trend is people are going after unsexy business because the unsexy business are the new sexy business.
Yeah.
Because here you're creating a new business model. Everybody wants technology. Everybody wants AI. Everybody... It's going into that red ocean and starting developing and all that. But there are a wealth of opportunities here in the unsexy business. Either people have made the brick and mortar business for 40 years, 50 years. They're retiring. There is nobody going to take after it. And it's not really sexy. Or it's just like this packaging business where you find a hole in the organization or in the business model. And then you fill it up and you make it turn into a sexy business. So well done. So for our audience, really, you know, let's not always go into the technology side because it's cool, finance, crypto, you know, blockchain. Look at also opportunities on the other side. They're probably equally interesting, right?
And definitely. And actually, when I was studying data science, there was a saying that we would use. I'm not sure if it's a saying, but something that we would say with to each other, which is that not every problem requires machine learning or data analysis. Okay. Some problems can be solved with basic math. You know, oftentimes with certain businesses or certain problems, people want to throw money at it. They want to throw technology at it, thinking that it's going to solve the problem. Oftentimes, you just overcomplicate the situation. Mm. Some things really don't require that much technology. In the first place, it's just overkill. So definitely agree with this. Technology has its place. AI has its place. It's definitely revolutionizing everything. And we can see that apparently. But, you know, it's not, no one, not everyone has to pursue this as the first route.
I have a story on this, which actually happened to me today. Just a simple story. And maybe it's relevant to the audience as well. It's, you know, in our office, we have a button to exit the door, right? So the door is magnetically locked, and then there's a button from the inside to go outside. You just push the button. It's not been operating for a week. So here the office manager talked to the office administrator. Please find a provider to fix this. The office administrator went and he went to the supply chain guy and asked him, can you find a provider, a technical person to come or a company to come fix that? And he went out and three quotations because of compliance, because of that. We got three quotations from the different one. One of them, they, you know, they wanted to come visit to see the problem. They charge you money for the visit and so forth. And you know what happened today? I asked the office coordinator, give me a screwdriver. So he gave me a screwdriver. I unscrewed the two screws, and I opened it. There's a wire which is out. I put the wire in, and I closed it, and it worked.
Very simple.
Very simple. And that's the simple math that you're talking about.
No, definitely.
So I found this in a lot of companies where they overcomplicate things and they want to follow a process without using their mind. Maybe there are better solutions than the process. Maybe you challenge the process. Maybe you can look at it and, you know, be creative, be innovative, brainstorm, think about issues. And that's where team empowerment is important. Creativity, innovation, brainstorming is really important in today's workplace, right? Do you agree? Yeah. So that's good. Now I'm going to move you to the networking side, okay? And typically in my age and maybe all the executives that are listening or they're out there, their network is a trade show, a customer meeting, exchange of business cards, and now with all these scans of card readers and whatever, we just have it in our Outlook. And my Outlook has 12,500 contacts. Do I know everybody? No. But I have amassed those over the years because I went to trade shows. I spoke here. I met this. I don't recall a lot of these people. So I have a lot of contacts, yes, but I don't actually use them or leverage them. So two questions for you. In your business, how did you rely on network and how do you approach network? And do you engage them? You don't? Give me your view on networking.
So networking is great. And we actually were discussing this earlier today. But I think networking is great. But what I'm disenfranchised to or what I don't really agree is, you know, some wording used with networking, for example, you know, engaging your network, which you just mentioned, for example, the idea of utilizing your network in order to provide value to yourself is something that I'm not really a big fan of. I do see the value of a network is that you're here to provide value to people. And of course, you want to provide value to people that are also enriching you and bringing value to you by nature. You know, that's my relation with networks. You know, I have a great pool of friends, people that I really connect with, people that I look up to, people that are doing things that I would aspire to get to at that level. These are the sort of people that you want to be engaged with. And of course, by bringing up your value in what you do, then you will, you know, connect with people that also have higher values as well, because they also see what you see in them, vice versa with yourself.
Yes, yes. You brought up a very good point, providing value, because I look at social circles. Sometimes I go even on trade shows. When you start introducing, hello, my name is, and you're listening to the other person introduction, what goes on in your mind is, what's in it for me, right? I want to see how the value is from this person. I understand his profile. Okay, he does this. He works for this company. He's probably an entrepreneur. He's, you know, he's rich, he's famous, whatever it is. And I always project it to myself, what's in it for me? Your approach, and the right approach, actually, how can I help this person and add value? Because if you add value, the person reciprocates. And that's the right approach to manage your network and engage your network. And in fact, if you look at LinkedIn practices, right? LinkedIn practices, you put a post and you're seeking followers or you're seeking engagement from the LinkedIn. So you have be more visible. So that's the ask. But before you ask, give them value on your post. Provide them with knowledge, provide them with content, provide them with something. The rest will follow.
Definitely agree. And I think you do that very well, you know, on your LinkedIn, always providing value and not asking for anything in return.
True.
It really elevates what you're trying to relate to. People can start really understanding that you're a thought leader. You're just there sharing your knowledge with other people to learn as they please, not asking anyone to do anything in return. And I think that's the right approach to it.
How is it working with a partner?
I think it's good. Now, my co-founder is a good friend of mine. And, you know, they always say, be cautious when you work with your friends.
Yeah, friends and families. Yeah.
Friends and families. And I would say for the most part, this is true. I've tried working with many friends of mine. And it's extremely difficult because, you know, at some point, they can become personal.
Yeah.
And that's when things break down. But, you know, having a business partner where we can really separate The friend element of it and then the business element of it is rare. And it really makes the experience a lot more fun and enjoyable. I really enjoy working with someone rather than doing it on my own. You're really going against teams. Now, if you're competing in the industry and you're alone, you're competing against people that have entire teams put together. So you really want to go out in business with a partner or with multiple partners, people that you can latch onto, complement each other with different skill sets. Then you have a good chance of competing with businesses that have been there for a while.
Mm-hmm. And, I know you very well, right? As opposed to the audience, but you're a great team player and you perfect things for the sake of the teams. I remember the very famous swimming competition. You're on the swim team, you're swimming competition in, I think, part of the high school. And it was a relay for four people. And remember, your team was about to come last in that competition. And you were the fourth swimmer. And you went in the water and for something magical happened and you just raced, giving that dedication and full out for the team, and your team came first. And that was a wow moment for me. It brought me tears in my eyes, right? But taking this into life, right? So working with teams is a trait, because a lot of people are solopreneurs, right? They want to work on their own. They have difficulty working with teams because of element of trust, element of emotions, element of empathy, elements of negotiation, elements of persuasion. There's a lot of these elements that consist a person able to work with a team. So these are the traits that I wanted to really cover. What is your take on these traits?
Everything you said makes perfect sense. I do believe that the team is the most important element of any business, any organization, any competition. If you have a very synergetic team, then you can really get ahead. And you can of course do things on your own, and there's another saying, which is, if you want something to be done right, do it yourself.
Yes.
But if you really want to succeed and you want to move ahead far, then you want to put together a team of people that complement each other.
Exactly. Yes.
And these different skill sets, different pros come together, and then they mitigate the cons. Everyone has shortcomings. Everyone has things going for them that they really excel at compared to their peers.
Yeah.
And when you put people together like this, then you bring out the best in people and you mitigate the shortcomings of each person. And that makes a very effective team, makes you very competitive, and then you can go and nothing can stop you.
Very good. Very good. Let's go into lessons. Now, I think take me back to whatever days you want, university, first job, now. Give us one or two lessons that has impacted you and you have learned from it. That you like to share.
I'm still very young to be giving any lessons to anyone. But the main thing that I've really learned throughout the years is to not be afraid to just take a risk and to jump into something that's uncertain. Even though everything may seem stacked against you, don't wait around and try to perfect the thinking or perfect the knowledge. Just jump in, and then the lessons will come to you. And this always occurs. When I'm starting a business, many people come with objections. What if this happens? Or what is your unique proposition? Why would people come and buy from you? Why don't they go to your competitor?
Yeah.
Now, it's so easy to come up with objections. And then you can sit around and analyze it and try to calculate it. When we were talking a bit before about, backup plans, maybe you study it, try to find the best approach, jump in, and always have a backup plan. This is always good, but at the same time, sometimes it's best to not have a backup plan. Just be a little bit impulsive, not extremely impulsive. Of course, you got to study a little bit and make informed decisions. But a little bit of impulsivity, just acting when you think something is right, I feel like there is less harm done.
Follow it here maybe than here maybe.
To an extent.
Or balance both, right?
Yeah.
Balance the mind, balance the heart.
But if you don't jump in, you're not going to do it, and someone will do it in your place. And then in hindsight, you'll say, I had this idea in the past and this person did it. Okay, but you could have also tried it.
So many of those have passed by me.
Yeah, right? Same here.
Yeah.
Of course.
And the same goes with if you want to buy a real estate property, if you want to buy this, or you want to change your job or whatever, you always have the what if scenario.
Yeah.
And that's what's holding you back. You always look for the barriers, not the opportunities.
And barriers come very easily. Barriers are always present. I feel like your mind is programmed to think about barriers, you know, to protect yourself.
Yeah.
You want to jump into a new business opportunity, you're going to come up with a million objections why you shouldn't do it.
I think the more successful people in taking on new ventures are the trained minds, where you don't think about barriers, but you think about opportunities when it comes to what if, right?
Yes.
So that's a very good lesson.
Yeah, and every problem usually comes out with, you know, a lesson or something that takes you to the next level. You know, you asked me for two lessons. This is the other one I remember now. But throughout the business that I've worked on for the past three, four years, every time that we faced a major obstacle and it really felt like, you know, this is the end of the business, or, you know, you feel super stressed because it's something that you've never dealt with. Mm. At some point, time is the greatest healer, as they say, or something along those lines. When you overcome that obstacle, you're automatically elevated to another level, because the problem occurred because you were unsure. You didn't know. You were uneducated about it. The problem forces you to overcome it and to learn what you didn't learn. And so by the time you overcome the obstacle, you're now another person, you know? And the next obstacle that comes is more challenging. You face the same amount of stress, but then you overcome it and you get leaps ahead. And I feel like that's been the cycle for at least the business that I've been working on.
Beautifully said. Last question, I promise. What's your advice to the audience, the young minds?
My advice to the young minds, again, I'm too young to be giving any advice to anyone. And I guess the main advice is what I mentioned before on the lessons. Just, you know, jump in, take the risk. Mm. Don't be afraid to pivot. And, you know, take advice from people that you aspire to be like. You know, oftentimes, as I was saying, people come and give you their opinion. People love to give their opinion, and always take opinions with a grain of salt. Try to follow the opinion of people that you want to be like. You know, those are the people who have done it. So their experience is something that you want to listen to. But other people that may have great advice, but not relevant to your situation, take it in, understand it, see what value it can serve. Take it with a little grain of salt.
Ryan, this was very inspiring. Thank you for being open, authentic, and casual with our people, with our audience. I think this podcast will enrich their ideas, their thought process, and hopefully will guide them to whatever decision, whatever path they want to choose. So thank you again.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Reimagining You. If you enjoyed the episode, follow the show, leave a review, and share it forward. See you next week with a new episode. Keep reimagining you.